You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, July 7th, 2010. This is episode 139, Wells Tech Road Trip, Omaha, Nebraska. Welcome back to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Martin Spriggs, your host, and joining me as usual from, I don't know if it's beautiful today or not over there, Sally, but Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota.
It is beautiful.
Is it?
Beautiful Sleepy Eye. And I just am packing my bags, Martin, because we're taking a trip yet again, going from Liverpool,
New York.
Seems
like we just got home.
Yeah. Right. Now we're heading right past Sleepy Eye all the way over to Omaha, Nebraska to talk to Jason Schmidt, our tweeting teacher.
Our tweeting teacher, yes. And we're going to talk to him about some smart board technology. That's a technology that we've had a couple people on in the past. I know we had an MLC professor on to talk about how he uses it and how he trains future teachers to use it. I know we've talked to Gail about this as well, and probably on a couple other occasions as well, where this really seems to be a staple of the modern classroom.
You know, I was just kind of reflecting a little bit about smart boards at our school, Martin. We've had them for 2 years now, and I guess what I can say about it is mostly is that the kids are just so comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
They interact with the board as a natural thing. You know, it's no big deal. It's just a given with these digital natives we're dealing with.
Right.
It's a real neat thing to see.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And should let our listeners know that we're back to our traditional recording setup where you are not here, which was really kind of nice when we did our last recording that we could see each other face to face. But I think this works too. And we're on to episode 139. And as Sally mentioned, we are on to Nebraska, Omaha, Nebraska, and Jason Schmidt. Let's listen to our conversation with Jason. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast, a very familiar name for frequent listeners from the Nebraska District as we continue our roadshow, Jason Schmidt. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Martin.
You are in Omaha, Nebraska, correct?
That's correct, yep.
Tell us a little bit about what you do there, how long you've been there, the kind of the nuts and bolts of Jason Schmidt.
Nuts and bolts, that's good. I've been here at Gethsemane in Omaha since I'm going to be starting my fourth year here this year, and I teach grades 3 and 4, and really that's the only extent of my call. Kind of on top of that, since I have an interest in technology and the applications that it has for the classroom, I do a lot of stuff with that as far as. I'm kind of an informal technology coordinator, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to the other teachers and try and come up with ideas for ways that they can incorporate technology into their lessons. And then,
that's code for you've got some technology duties, but you don't get paid for it.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
You do it for the love of the game.
Love of the game, love of the kids, love of the ministry. It's all ministry.
Very good. And the reason we have you on is you are using a technology in the classroom. In fact, you're going to be starting a school year where you're going to be using it in earnest, and that's smart board technology, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
So maybe explain the process that led you to this point, recognizing that there was some value, you know, in the smart board and actually endeavoring to get that into your classroom.
Well, I've been kind of fascinated by the technology for at least 5-6 years now. I used to teach in Florida, and I attended a conference down there, and I saw smart boards and how they were used, and I was just fascinated. You know, I saw the potential of something like that, both as a presentation platform, but then also for creating media-rich lessons and all of the things that you could include with those. I was just so fascinated by the technology. But the big thing that was kind of holding it back was cost. They're pretty expensive. So by the time I got here to Omaha, that was one of the things that was at the top of my list. I was like, oh man, you know, we really need to look into smart boards. We got to research that a little bit and see what would be involved with that. How can we use this really awesome tool to help make our teaching more effective? And you know, for various reasons, just the discussion was put off. And finally, this past school year, we actually won a contest where our local Hy-Vee was giving away smart boards. So we won the contest, they delivered it, and it's been sitting in our basement for a little while, just to kind of give us an opportunity to learn a little bit more about it and how to use it. And we finally are getting it up there and looking forward to using it this next school year.
So I'm curious about the learning curve. Obviously for you, you're a techie kind of guy, guessing that you were able to pick up on it well, but did you go to any special classes, and what about others on your staff, and have you taught them, and how have they received it?
I did go to a training that was sponsored by SMART. It was a 3-day course, basically, and throughout the course of that that professional development that I went to, I learned the ins and outs of the software. The smart board itself is actually very easy to use. Once you get over the fact that it's this big, fancy, expensive piece of technology, it's really not very complicated. You can think of a smart board as just a big touch screen for your computer. So anything you can do with a mouse, you can do with a smart board. So as far as the ease of use of the board itself, that's really easy. When it comes to the software, there are a lot of different tools that are available within the software that can make your use of the smart board even more effective and help you to design effective lessons to go along with it. And with that, there's a little bit of a learning curve, but there are a lot of resources out there that will make it really easy to master the different tools that are involved with it.
So I'm guessing that the teachers there then are going to look to you, since you went to the professional development class, to bring them up to speed as well. And I'm thinking that's probably a pretty good model for most schools. I know, Martin, when we first got a smart board at the Senate Administration Building, I went to class and then I conducted classes for the others there to help them get started. So Is that your plan pretty much, Jason, that others are going to be trained by you?
Right, that's my plan. The training that I went to was actually, they have a level one and they have a level two, and those are just learning how to use the software. And then the third day that I was there was actually how to train other people, how to do how to run the level one and the level two trainings. So I'm planning on doing that with our staff once we kind of get things organized a little bit. And that's another thing, too, that I don't want to just keep it here. That's something that, you know, I've talked to other schools in the area, and I would put it out there, I guess, to anybody else out there who'd be interested. If they have a smart board and they want to do some kind of training with it, I would really be excited to go out and help people just to make use of the technology, because I think it's such a great tool. There are so many different possibilities and ways to reach kids using it that I want to help people as much as possible.
So this is summer and teacher time for planning and, you know, putting together lesson plans and plotting out the year. How is this going to change things for you this year? Do you have to kind of intentionally think, oh, I've got this new tool, I've got to kind of modify the way I'm teaching, or does this become a centerpiece to each lesson plan, or does it vary by topic or subject?
Well, it depends on how you think about it as a teacher. I look at it as, this is just another tool that I have in my arsenal. I'm not going to be specifically looking for lessons that, or specifically looking for ways to incorporate the smart board into my lessons. I need to look at my lessons and see, okay, now I have this. This is another one of my tools that I have available. Would this be an appropriate way for me to use it? And if so, how am I going to kind of design my lessons around that? It does tend to lend itself a little bit more towards the math and the reading kinds of things, but you can really easily incorporate the board and the software. You can, anytime you're presenting a lesson, it's really easy to incorporate that. One of the big changes that it's going to have in my preparation, I think, is to try and get it into the hands of the kids. When you buy a board, you get 1,000 licenses of the software. So you can install it on every single computer you own and not have to worry about running out of installs on it. So I think that it can be a really powerful tool for the kids too, just to see how the whole process works and kind of use that as a way to extend their thinking and extend their learning and kind of get them to think a little bit more critically and creatively about different things.
Sure. There's a whole smart board ecosystem, if you will, out there of all kinds of contributions from the field, from teachers, from all grades and from all subject matters. Have you begun to explore that at all and see what's useful out there? Now, the software is a big part of this, and you've even used the software before you use the hardware. Describe a little bit about maybe the value of that whole ecosystem.
The ecosystem is fantastic. Because smart boards are so prevalent, there are so many people who use them, that they're just scads of resources out there. You could literally spend days and weeks and months, probably years, looking through all of the stuff that is out there. I wrote a blog post recently, and I'll get a link to Sally about that. You guys can put in the show notes if you want. Just with a couple of the places that I go when I'm looking for something. One of the things that is really awesome that's out there is Smart has its own kind of a database of teacher submitted notebook files, and they call it Smart Exchange. It's really fantastic in there. You know, you can, if you're looking for a specific kind of a language arts lesson or a math concept or something like that, chances are somebody has created something that you can at least adapt to your own purposes, if not to just use it the exact way that it is. And that was actually how I became more familiar with the software from the start, was just to take a look at what other people had done and try to figure out how they did the things that they did and kind of adapt it for my own purposes.
And Jason, I'm probably most excited to talk to you about creating something that I'm guessing doesn't exist in Smart Exchange, and that is Bible history or Christlight type lessons for the smart board. And I understand that you've been thinking along those lines as well.
I have, yeah. Just with the amount of resources that we have available to us through the Christlight curriculum, it really does lend itself very well towards creating smart board lessons for it. And I've kind of adopted that as my summer project. Today, in the past couple of days, actually, I've been started already working on some sample lessons just to kind of get a feel for the software and how I can make everything kind of fit together and look nice and all of those kinds of things. And I'm nearly done with a couple of them. So I'll be putting those out on our CRCT wiki. And then hopefully we can kind of disseminate those a little bit more and try to get more people involved and see if there's a way that we can try and cover all of the Christlight lessons. But that to me, I think, is a really important part of, first of all, it's a very important part of our ministry and what we do, and it's the foundation of everything that we have going on. And at the same time, you know, it's a real great opportunity for some interactivity and kind of creating these media-rich lessons that will help hold the kids' attention and kind of make it more meaningful for them and memorable for them.
And just remind our listeners quickly what that CRCT wiki stands for.
Oh, yeah, sorry. The CRCT is a project that I have with Jerome Wolf. He's a principal out in Michigan. And he's been working for several years to kind of collect curriculum resources for Christian teachers, CRCT. And we started a wiki and have been trying to disseminate those lessons and that information through that medium. So if people want to check that out, it's crct.wikispaces.com. And I'll send you a link for that too.
Very cool. Now, long-time listeners or even short-time listeners will know that, Jason, you are a big-time user of Twitter. And
yes.
There's probably, in fact, I think Sally has given you a nickname, the tweeting teacher. Is that right, Sally?
Yeah, I think so.
Something like that.
He wins the prize.
Affectionately known as, right. Is that a great way to, speaking specifically of smart boards and maybe other users of smart boards, is that a way of sharing tips, resources, those kinds of things for you?
For me, it's one way. I have a multitude of different ways that I get the information that I have coming into me. It's taken me a lot of time to get to the point that I'm at. But there are a bunch of people that I follow on Twitter that are just fantastic smart board users and sharers, and people that have been using them for years and have lots of really great information and really great links and fun activities. And it doesn't necessarily have to be for a smart board either, or even with an interactive whiteboard. These are just great great activities that these people have discovered or come up with or developed, and they've really helped me to be a lot more prepared, I think, for what I have, for the lessons and for the way that I'm going to use a smart board in my classroom this coming school year.
Makes sense.
So, Jason, we'd love it if you circle back with us as the school year gets underway. Maybe take some video of one of your lessons or something so that we can get a feel for how exactly you do end up using the smart board in your classroom. I'd actually like to be a third or fourth grader sitting there enjoying it all.
Yeah, I will certainly do that. That's a great idea. I'll get on that this school year.
Jason, thanks for taking the time this afternoon, and blessings on your continued preparations for the new school year and your use of some I think critical technology these days for most classrooms. And that's cool that you're able to take advantage of it. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you, Martin. No thanks, problem. Sally.
Yep.
Thanks again to Jason for taking some time out of his preparation, I'm sure, for the next school year, and to talk about something exciting for him, certainly, a new introduction of a pretty good piece of technology into his classroom.
Yeah, I always appreciate all the resources that Jason shares via his Twitter
awesome,
link.
Huh?
And we'll make sure and include a link to that in the show notes, and also a link to all the resources that he mentioned as we were talking. And just a little bit of a plug, Jason is smart board training supervised.
Certified.
Sorry. That's the word I'm looking for.
Bonafide. Certified.
And willing to travel to your school to help you get some smart board training. So if you're looking to bring your teachers up to speed, you might want to get in touch with him. And Twitter's a great way to do that.
Yeah. Very eloquent. Seems like a really fun. I've never met him, I don't think, face-to-face. Maybe I have. But seems really eloquent and fun to be with. So it'd be, I think it would be a good time as well. Make learning fun. And the smart board is kind of fun anyway. So.
Yes, it is.
Take advantage of that. Connect with Jason directly. He is JasonSchmidt123 on Twitter. And we do know he checks his Twitter feed.
Right? Regularly,
that's
yes.
That's right. All right, shall we move on to our picks of the week?
Well, my pick of the week is related to a recently wrapped up conference. It's the International Society for Technology and Education, ISTE conference.
ISTE. You talked about that last year, I think, didn't you?
That's right. It was called NECC last year,
right.
Sponsored by ISTE, but they just changed the name and went with their society name as the conference name as well. And it's just wrapped up this past week in Denver. And for those of you that are on Twitter, you are just probably overwhelmed by the number of tweets coming out of ISTE. They used #ISTE10, and we can include a link to that archived search history of all the tweets that came out of there. And just a smorgasbord for ed education technology type minds, and so many great resources shared and lots of good discussions held. And in addition to the conference website, which has a lot of the program materials and such, independent people set up an ISTE conference Ning with a lot of discussion and resource sharing on a Ning website. And also they used a particular DIGO group to share links and information that was accomplished during the conference. So okay. I just wanted to make sure and share all those different available links and things, because these days you don't have to be at a conference in person to gather a lot of the same information. You can do it all remotely. And so check out the links. I did have one particular blog I was going to include a link to as well. And it was a reflection that someone did about the themes at ISTE this year. And I thought it was kind of telling. One of them was related to budget cuts and things. Even though these are techie kind of people, they're seeing the crunch in their local schools with budgetary concerns. So the economic effect on technology, excuse me, on technology and education. Mm-hmm. Was felt at the conference. And then there was an interesting reflection called Digital Divide, and the fact that you're seeing more and more of a division between the people that actually can put their hands on the technology and those that can't. And, you know, hardware, broadband access, and all those kind of things are becoming a real issue in that division there. And someone actually left a comment and said, and there's also a division between the teachers that are using technology in the mm-hmm. classroom and those that aren't. So yeah. Kind of a two-sided digital divide. So just a little bit of thinking material for you to browse from the ISTE conference that was recently wrapped up.
Yeah, we're really in a unique time. And maybe this happens with any new technology or new things that come on the scene, is that you have that divide. You've got the people that adopt it fairly early on, people that are comfortable with it, the people that resist it or never get comfortable with it. And I can't imagine that that's a good thing in an elementary school or a high school, where somebody could go from class to class or grade to grade and have an entirely different experience, you know, where they're maybe just kind of catching on to a particular approach and teaching style. And not that every teacher teaches the same way, but the use of technology has such a, it can be such a blessing to a learning environment that, boy, it would be nice if we could get all on the same page, in other words. And I think that's why some of these conferences exist, right?
Right, and hopefully these people, these education technology leaders that attended, are going back and sprinkling that information, and they are obviously through things like this Ning and DIGO group, you know, sharing all the information that they garnered from the conference. So,
yep.
Good stuff.
Very good. Thanks for sharing. My pick of the week is a little utility that I found extremely useful. It's called Saluto. It's in beta, but it's free and you can get your hands on it. Windows only, Saluto.com. They brand themselves anti-frustration software. And essentially what it is you install it, it sits on the front end of your boot process, so when you start up your computer, it starts first, and it measures how long it takes to get to a state where you can use your computer. So when everything has been loaded and you know, basically the hard drive is now can ease up and rest a little bit, it tracks that time and compares it. And the best part about it is it provides you with a graph, and actually it's an interactive graph that shows you what's on the front end, what really should be removed from the boot process. It's just taking up time or processor power. What might be removed, but it would be your call, and then what can't be removed. Obviously, like some very, you know, kernel type operations that need to run for the operating system to actually function. And I was able, just in a couple tweaks, to able to reduce my boot time by about 20 to 30 seconds. So I went from about 3 minutes to 2.5 minutes. And as many times as you start up your computer, you know, that can be a time saver. And works pretty well. It's a nice, rich graphical interface. You can see exactly what's going on with your system. And then it manages that. So every time you boot, you can see, you know, if it's taking longer than it did before, and you can go investigate. Because many times, some of the things that you install over the course of a week, and Sally, you and I probably see this all the time where we're trying new stuff, downloading open source software, whatever, many of them install something that runs at boot up, and then over time, your computer just slows down to a crawl. And this is a nice little utility that helps you kind of figure out what's going on and optimize and tune things to a point where you can be pretty confident that what's loading is what you want loading. And you can actually tag the program, the startup program, with three different designations. You can kind of leave it alone, and that's kind of the on boot designation. Then they have something called pause, which essentially says, don't start until I tell you to start. And finally, the other one is delay. And that's kind of a cool tool because it waits till everything else is done, and then it senses when the processor and the I/O or the computer activity, hard disk computer activity, is slower or lower, then it loads those. So things that don't have to be available to you, you know, from the get-go, you'd probably put that in the in that delay category. So it's I think, a great utility, and again, the price is right and useful, very useful.
I got two comments for you, Martin.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is, Saluto may give up on my computer. I hope it's really patient because mine is really slow.
This sounds like it's made for you.
Yeah, I have to give it a try. The other is actually a confession, and if we've made it to episode 139 without our listeners knowing this, then maybe it's time for me to come clean, and that is that I'm a terrible speller. So there you go. And I actually typed Saluto into our mind map, and I typed it incorrectly, and you read it off the mind map. It's S-O-L-U-T-O.
You're right. It's like solution. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's my mistake, and I apologize for that. S-O-L-U-T-O, and it will be in the show notes.
Very good. Yeah, I don't know what Saluto goes to, but it's not what I'm talking about.
No, don't go there.
All right. And our mind manager didn't flag that as bad spelling, but it's not supposed to. Okay, community feedback. We had a lot of people sharing info with us, including Jason Schmidt. Why don't you start with Jason?
Sure. Jason tweeted a link to Twitter for Teachers Wiki, which is a PB Works wiki. And if you are looking at getting started with tweeting, maybe this is a good place to start. And what's neat about it is they've set up a list of Twitterers by academic subject areas. So if you're interested in a particular subject area, maybe journalism or foreign language or drama, then you can find a list of teachers that are tweeting about that in this wiki, and follow some really good tweeting teachers that speak to your particular subject area. So I think it's a really nice way to get it organized, mm-hmm. and probably a lot of advantages out there for teachers that are interested in developing their personal learning networks.
So here's a question. Is it Twitterers or tweeters?
Well, I'd say today it's tweeters, but, you know, tomorrow I might tell you something different. What would you say?
It's one
say,
of those
Martin?
Burning questions. Yeah. I don't like either one of them, so I'm waiting for a better word. So.
Okay. We'll just be patient.
All right. On to Dan Walters.
Yeah, actually, and this was via tweet as well. I heard from Pastor Dan Walters, who serves out in New York State. Not quite sure the congregation, but he tweeted a question asking if anyone had heard about TechSoup, and the URL is techsoup.org. And I, to be honest, had not heard of it. Martin, maybe you had, but mm-hmm. A couple of our tweeters out there did respond and had some experience with it. Jason said that his brother works at Microsoft and says techsoup.org is the best way for nonprofits to get Microsoft software. And Pastor Phil Huebner down in Florida mentioned that he's used it before as well. Mm-hmm. So my interest was piqued, and I went out and did some reading and actually filled out their applications and things like that to find out what was involved. And basically, you can set up an account for your organization, but it needs to be a nonprofit, and you have to actually send in your federal...
Right.
Exactly. You have to send in your your letter that indicates that from your federal tax ID and everything. Mm-hmm. So fairly easy to get started, but there is some paperwork involved. It's not an instantaneous thing. Once you're approved as an organization with TechSoup, then you can shop their bargains, basically. And they do have some really nice discounts on hardware and software. But interestingly enough, the one thing that I was most drawn to were the Microsoft products. And as I read deeper, it turns out that the TechSoup discounts don't apply to churches or schools. And that's because they have separate pricing for schools and some nonprofit stuff for churches. So mm-hmm. only if your church is involved in social activities, like runs a food bank or something like that, that's non-religious, can you actually use TechSoup to get the Microsoft products. So that's a little bit of a downer. But there are other discounts there, and they may be worthy of researching as well.
Yeah, I've dabbled in it on and off with mixed results as well. You know, there's no such thing as a free lunch, but I think there is for specific needs. This is probably at least worth looking at. It doesn't cost you anything, and I think occasionally this could be of benefit to a church or a school.
Okay.
Thanks for raising the question, Dan.
Yep. Next up, we heard from this fellow named Martin, and he was adding some links to DIGO.
Yes.
So maybe you want to tell us about that, Martin.
It was just to refresh my a topic that we visited a number of times, and that's this whole concept of using Google Apps. And I know of a number of organizations within the Synod using Google Apps. Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School, just north of here, is using Google Apps for their intranet, basically. And I just ran across an article from ReadWrite Web about additional states adopting Google Web Apps or Google Apps for schools. So if that's something that has been intriguing to you and you think that might work in your scenario, might be a good read. And you can get that link in the show notes.
Just nice to see, more and more people adopting it must mean that they're doing something right there at Google mm-hmm. Apps. You know, just adds to the validity of the product.
Yep.
All right. Next up, we had some activity over on our Wells Tech listserv. And for those of you that are not familiar with the listserv, you can subscribe there and be part of an email group and ask questions of the class, basically, and have an audience of all the different tech-interested folks in Wells. And recently, Justin Nenman, who's at St. Peter Lutheran School in Appleton, Wisconsin, asked a question on the listserv related to using iPods and cell phones in the classroom. He was just doing some research in particular for his school, as well as writing a paper, and he wondered if that those technologies were really being picked up in our Wells classrooms and how people were using them. Mm-hmm. And I was able to respond and point him to a couple of uses that I'm aware of. We've talked with Pastor Phil Huebner in the past, and he is using iPads for their preschool program down at Christ the King in Palm Coast, Florida. And then Pastor Rob Gunther recently commented that he had used an iTouch app along with the Quizlet website to have flashcards for his catechism class, for mm-hmm. his catechism students. And so those were a couple of real examples that I was aware of, but no one else really chimed in on this discussion thread on the listserv. So if you are using any kind of touch applications or looking at the possibility of using handheld devices in the classroom, we'd love to hear about it out on the Wells Tech listserv.
Yep, I think it's coming. It's just I'm not sure it's come to the Wells yet, so to
yeah.
speak, or at least not big
that.
Time. We couldn't.
Okay, moving on.
Yes.
Last comment from Staff Minister Ben Karlowski, who's up at St. Paul in Green Bay. And he was following up on our podcast last week when we talked to Pastor Jeremiah Gum about the blogging pastor. And he actually pointed me to the St. Paul's Youth Group blog, and they're actually out on a mission trip and blogging the experience and posting photos as they go. So they're using a blog platform to document their youth group activities, to stay connected with their congregation and mm-hmm. parents back home as they're doing a particular mission trip. So I thought that was an excellent example of blogs and ministry, and you'll want to follow the link in our show notes to check that out.
Very good. That's awesome. I think mm-hmm. great use case for that. Well, Sally, we have another location to visit next week, and we're headed south. Not quite to Mississippi, but right next door, right?
Pretty close. Actually, we are going down to Birmingham, Alabama, to Our Savior Lutheran Church, where Pastor Ben Krotz serves. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk to him about his use of Skype. I understand Pastor Krotz has some spread out members and is able to connect with them using Skype for Bible class. So mm-hmm. it'll be interesting to hear his story.
Very good. Let's close the show, as we always do, with the music from one of our Wells groups, and that is Corbin Creek this week. Their song, It Seems to Be the Day, from their album, Could It Be Me? Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Talk to you next week from Birmingham.
It seems to be the day when nothing has gone the way that I planned, simplicity falls. Seems to be the day when I cannot do anything right. The simple true. It seems to me, when it all comes down, I can't compare to what you'd have me do and save me from this wretched state I'm in. Deserving from my sin and keep me in the shadow of your wings. Remind me that you washed away my sin. The day when I cannot change my stubborn ways, locked in my own cage. It seems to be the day when I'm terrified. Morning light. Deserving from my sin and keep me in the shadow of your wings. Remind me that you washed away my sin. Guide me in to your saving arms and catch me away. wretched state I'm in. Release me from the deserving from myself, and keep me in the shadow of your wings. Remind me that you washed away my sin. Glad there was the day when Jesus came down and took my place so I could wear